This is Floss Weekly. I'm Doc Searls. This week, Jonathan Bennett and I talked to Robin Gureus of Ardour. Ardour is a pro-level Linux audio, Linux and other operating systems audio editing platform. It's really fabulous. Jonathan knows an awful lot about it. He's a heavy user. I'm becoming one soon, but tune in. That is coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 707, recorded Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. Ardour and Linux Pro Audio. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. Join a community of IT learners who access 5,800 plus hours of IT skills and training courses and interact with each other and subject matter experts to better themselves, their organizations, and their careers. Get 30% off when you sign up at itpro.tv/twit and use code TWIT30 at checkout. And by Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat that lets you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process and what they've learned from their experiences. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. Hey there, everybody, everywhere. I am Doc Searls, and this is Floss Weekly today. Jonathan Bennett himself joins me. He from his usual lair in Oklahoma, and me from a hotel in Mountain View, California. So how you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah. It's the third week in a row, I think. Last week I got tagged last minute and came in with Einstein hair. And today I made sure to get up a little earlier and went and slicked everything back. So we're looking a little better today, a little more professional, hopefully.
It isn't just to look cool. It's actually to control the whole thing, I guess. Yes. It gets out of control. I last had hair like that when it was about 5. Then the rest of it wore off after a while.
That's not the problem I've got.
So our guest today is Robin Gureus. We'll get the correct pronunciation of that eventually. He's with Ardour. You're familiar with this, I know.
Yes. In fact, I reached out to him on IRC because I've been bugging him about bugs and features I'd like to see in Ardour. And Robin is one of the guys that, is at the keyboard a lot of the times and puts up with my continual dripping of asking for things. And we had the day open. I said, hey, I went for Paul Davis, the guy that really runs Ardour. And he's like, well, I'm going to be jet lagged and maybe not even home by then, but I would love to hear what Robin has to say about some of these things. So we put it together and we've got him here today. It should be fun.
So, and Paul is somebody we had on in the past, long before my time, right?
Many years ago, yes.
Yeah, many years ago. So there's a lot to catch up on. So I'm going to hurry up. We've got a little bit of a late start and introduce Robin. He tells us he switched back and forth between academic projects, art, and R&D, and since 2008, he's been a central figure in the Linux audio community, working full-time on Floss, notably Ardour itself. So welcome to the show there, Robin. You should
pop up for those of us. Thanks for having me.
There you go. That looks cool. Okay. You're coming in stereo. You've got the two speakers behind you.
Only one mic in front, which is kind of anyway.
It's a 2.1 system, right?
Yeah. And it's a home stereo indeed. I have some monitor speakers on the side on the desk. But yeah, for video, it's a lot easier like that. So then to turn around, there's windows in the back and you're going to see all the outside. Though it's pretty dark. I live in Berlin these days. So mm-hmm. It's already like almost 7 p.m. Late in the evening for me.
Well, if you rock out, probably the day's starting for you. I suppose.
Well, since I work with Paul most of the time, I'm kind of a late bird, or like I usually spend all the night coding. Like, he gets up early, I get up late. And then we work on order most of the, well, here it's the afternoon for him, early morning. So it's kind of fine. And I'm used to headphones for production anyway.
So this may not be an Ardor topic at all, but it's interesting for me, which is that I'm old enough, so I remember when stereo came along in the 1950s. And when it did, because nobody had headphones. If they did, they were mono. And in my case, they were for ham radio. And who cared about stereo there? There was no source that was stereo. But when stereo first appeared, it was just this amazing thing where you could get this soundstage spread across a wall, and you could look at it and say, there are the horns there, and there's the bass there, and there's the drums over there. And a cool thing about it is that, as far as I know, stereo was not patented. It was just, there it was. You just have two sound sources. But now we've got Dolby Pro this and all these other things, which I think are patented. Are they not? And I'm wondering if that's an encumbrance at all for you. You know, for Ardor, or people doing sound production now?
Well, we don't do the Dolby Atmos stuff, which is patented. And yeah, for the panning, yeah, we used a long time, like Viva panning is, that's free. And Ambisonics was also, or the patents ran out early on. So we used a lot of the Ambisonics surround panning. And the nice thing about that is you can later on fold it down to like stereo or 5.1 or how many speakers you have. So you do a generic panning, which is only angular based. Like, you don't specify the direct speaker as you did with, you know, early stereo was like hard left, hard right. When, you know, the first Beatle records, like, you couldn't pan in between the speakers. It was one or the other. And so that's also a bit what like Dolby Atmos does, or the 5.1. Usually you have the dialogue in only one speaker, and the sound effects, they don't really go a lot of, well, it's not, maybe at most overlap between two speakers, but never three or four, because in the room there would be so much interference, or like comb filtering and, well, some frequencies canceling each other out. So you try to want to avoid that, and it's pretty much all the way down to like whatever, pretty much a stereo field, effectively. But that's something I'm not really an expert on, to be honest.
I don't know. It sounded like some expert dialogue there.
DSP.
I'm real curious what the story is. How did you go from all of the things you had your hand in to working on Ardor and becoming I believe one of the paid developers there, right?
Yeah. Well, it started around 2004-05. I was starting a PhD in physics in Berkeley. And I was trying to figure out, now this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. And at the same point, my then girlfriend, now wife, she got a grant to make a short movie, or short film. And so I said, like, I'll do all the sound design and do post-production because it's going to be fun. And what you learn as a physicist is basically solving problems. So I just started to dive in, and I thought, like, how hard can it be? And it was kind of, well, famous last words. Okay, I found Ardor early on, like Paul was just releasing, or it was 0.99, and there was never a 1.0 version, and then like early 2.0. And I figured out, okay, this can work for doing the basic sound design, and I just need a video player to synchronize everything along. And so I started writing XJDO. It's a Jack synchronized video player. And then I figured out, okay, I need more. I want to have a timeline for that. And so I started working on like at first it was a third party tool, like an application. It shows a video timeline, and I just put the application on top of Ardor, like, and synchronized the zoom level. And then I kind of, okay, this works for me. And at one point I thought, like, okay, I need to take this to a level that it also works for other guys. And, so I met Paul a year or two later at the Linux Audio Conference, 2007 in Karlsruhe in Germany. And so we started talking about, like, yeah, video timeline integration, and okay, it sounds like a fun thing to do. And I still had a grant for doing a second movie, so I was kind of I could work on that stuff, because my interest was also in, like, to get the movie soundtrack done and not to write free software. More kind of the software was a byproduct of what I was actually going to do. And I got more and more involved with the Linux audio community at that point. And then in 2009, the financial crisis happened. Like all the movie, there's no funding for movies anymore. And I kind of needed to, pivot. I went to do for web design for like half a year and I kind of, and I applied for a university to just keep going in an art department, like making new connections. I thought it's a nice thing to do. Like in Europe, you don't pay for education. And for a PhD program, I was even paid to do that. And so the idea was like getting in touch with new artists, see what else is out there. And also having time and, well, funding to work on projects that I like to work and develop. Yeah. And I ended up doing a PhD on audio latency compensation, which is another one of those projects. I thought, like, okay, at first started this, okay, it's going to take me 3 weeks and it's going to be done. And it eventually took like 8 years and the whole PhD for the project. But yeah, okay. So it was kind of a fun way to lure me in.
Fun. A true Renaissance man then, aren't you? Dabble in lots and lots of things.
Well, yeah. Also at the university, it helped. I could organize conferences and was co-organizing the Linux Audio Conference for 5 years in a row. Like it was always at a different venue, but I was always involved as an organizer and maintaining or, well, reviewing all the papers, organizing, well, all kinds of stuff. And that also helped me to like get in touch with different persons in the community, especially ones who write DSP. And there's lots of brilliant minds in the Linux audio community to do that. But what was missing a big time, or like most of the time, is a nice front end, a UI for users to, or well, control block parameters, or even to interact with certain DSP functions, like you said, like stereo panning or ambisonics panning. And we had a lot of the DSP, the hard stuff, but what we were missing were like nice front ends. So I started writing plugin UIs initially to Fons Adriensen, which you might have heard the name of. He does amazing, I call it most bang per byte software. It's like a very tiny, efficient pieces. And then he just started writing, well, front ends or like LV2 plugin UIs for that, for him. And I learned more and more and eventually also started doing my own plugin line, developing DSP by myself. Mm-hmm. And just talking to those guys, I learned a lot because they share their knowledge freely. It was not like, you need to pay for someone or like, to get the knowledge. Similar like university, the conferences, I was more like hanging around with on the hallway track and learning from all the bright and, smart guys, out there. So that definitely helped me to get started as well.
Yeah, very cool. Now you've got your own plugins that you've written, the X42 plugins, and I've got to admit I've never used them. I've historically used CAF plugins, but I've got to looking at you. I got to looking at yours.
Yeah, no comments.
Yeah, it's weird. I really like the CAF plugins, but so many people around the community are like, oh, well, don't use those. So tell me about yours. What all can you do with the X42 plugins? Why should you use them over CAF?
I initially started to look into CAF, like, because like with Ardor, I'm trying to like, if there's a project already existing, I think I should rather go and help the project out than start my own. If that's a choice. But with CAF, there were a lot of small issues, like the UI looked pretty well. And I think that's why most of the people also like them. They're like a nicely designed GUIs.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is in the sound design itself. Like the first is if you try to automate the EQ, you get all kinds of clicks and pops. And like it's not de-zippered. Like there's zipper noise as soon as you turn any of the control knobs. And the multi-band compressor has like phasing issues. You can even hear like the band splitter is not correct. And trying to help them out to fix that has like two issues. The first is like the plugin changes. So anybody who uses the plugin and then loads the updated version in a new session, it will sound different. And you do not want to have that with plugins. Like if you, well, open the same session, it should sound again in the future. And not have a different sound because some DSP bug was fixed. And the other one, like, was kind of hard to interact with the CAF developers at some point. And, well, I'm also not alone with that regard. There's a few other plugins who started in the same manner, like people who first contributed and then went off and did their own line. Like, we all are Calf graduates, if you want to put that, or alumni.
That's fun. So at this point in the Calf plugins, the DSP bugs are more of a feature. That's one of the quirks that make them endearing.
There's also Anfa is kind of it's perfectly fine to do that in audio. There's one guy called Anfa, he does sound design and he actually really abuses the stuff. Like, he knows what goes wrong and if you overdrive and you get distortion and all kinds of effects. So it's kind of a whatever works is in the audio department the right approach. Like, you're not always aiming for the clean sound, but sometimes you want to have the, a dirty old cable that just sounds great because it's a dirty old cable and you want that kind of. Well, same reason you still use tubes, like tube amps also have like imperfections which are great at some point.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how many of the rock albums from the 80s, when you read about production, they went and did the vocals in the bathrooms because that was the place where they could get that awesome, crazy reverb sound.
Right.
Yeah, that's a thing. So tell us about about your plugins, X42. What all can you do with those?
Well, in my case, I really wanted to have something clean that always works, especially for movie productions. I don't want to have the imperfections. I really want to have a clean sound of a quartet. And I needed to clean up like vocals or like the dialogue on set and have a nice mastering equalizer that doesn't, have any imperfections of those that I can cleanly automate. Mm. And initially there was there were headless plugins that were Latva plugins from Fonz. So the first one was the equalizer. And I need to have a nice UI, not just like some weird sliders that you have. I wanted to have a visual representation. And then I also needed professional audio plugin meters. Well, that's the equalizer you see. Mm-hmm. One part of the equalizer I liked, I built in dedicated limitations. Like, each band has a dedicated frequency range that you can dial in. Because with other, there's no limitation under the hood. Like, in theory, it can just go from 20 hertz to 20K. Mm-hmm. But I coming from an old analog world, and I like to have really a dedicated bass band, two dedicated mid-frequency bands, and a high band. Because I find those constraints are more beneficial during production. Like, you don't move all over the place and you focus more on what you're doing. So the feature of the equalizer is more the constraints that are built in rather than the flexibility. Mm-hmm. And so there's also a convenient analyzer in the back, like a frequency analyzer, which is pretty common. And you can also directly see a MIDI keyboard below, like, you know which frequencies are you're affecting. That helps.
Yeah.
Nothing really special. There's lots of equalizers out there, but it's kind of the way that I found, like, this is always one that I wanted to have, something that's easy to use.
So I know for my use, at least, it's really useful to have these plugins that actually work on Ardour on Linux, because that's where I use it. Right. And I assume the X42 plugins, they work on Linux, Mac, and Windows plugged into Ardour?
Right. Yes, that's true. Also FreeBSD, although I don't package them for FreeBSD. For Mac and Windows, I do provide binaries.
That's kind of a rabbit hole in and of itself, is trying to get plugins that'll work on different platforms, isn't it?
The DSP part, not so much. It's just C code. The hard part is the GUI or like the user interface, because you have different event systems also on special cases on Mac, like your Retina screens, you need to upscale them, and Windows event handling system is completely different again. And what I chose to do early on was, like, for the drawing, to use OpenGL. And that is very much cross-platform. The API is the same. And so I only needed to have like dedicated event, like for mouse and keyboard, the window itself, the system. But it wasn't too hard. Like, I tried to have a nice architecture in the first place. That's one thing I learned from Paul doing Ardour. Mm-hmm. He came up with an amazing clean architecture. And once you have that, like, building everything else around or even augmenting it and like all the design afterwards is so much easier than if you just start with a messy system and later on try to bolt on things. And Paul is an amazing system architect. Like, he's not much of a DSP engineer so much, so that's where I come in. But like the overall system, I was so impressed finding Ardour as a DAW, so I was kind of it's an amazing project to be a part of.
Yeah, very cool.
Well, I'd like to get us digging down to more uses, and the movie one is really an interesting one to me. But first, I have to let everybody know this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Bitwarden. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, at work, on the go, and is trusted by millions. With Bitwarden, you can securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. Bitwarden recently rolled out password-protected encrypted export. Export your vault in an encrypted format using the password of your choice. Mobile username generator. It includes support for three of the five aliases that Bitwarden supports. DuckDuckGo email alias is another. Support for their service has been integrated, bringing the number of supported alias services up to five. Bitwarden partnered with DuckDuckGo to create an integration with their forthcoming Mac OS browser. Stay tuned for when they'll launch this feature. Bitwarden is also a must need for your business. It's fully customizable and adapts to your business needs. Use Bitwarden Send, a fully encrypted method to transmit sensitive information, whether text or files. Generate unique and secure passwords for every site with enterprise-grade security. That's GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliant. Their Teams organization option is $3 a month per user, and their enterprise organization plan is $5 a month per user. Share private data securely with coworkers across departments or the entire company. Individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than $1 a month. The family organization option gives up to 6 users premium features for only $3.33 a month. At Twit, we're fans of password managers. Bitwarden is the only open-source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work, and is trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. That's bitwarden.com/twit. So, Robin, I'm wondering how, over the time you've been working with Ardor, how the usage of it has changed as the usage of audio has changed, especially by amateurs becoming professional. There are many, many more people involved in many, many more industries here. Podcasting in the last few years has taken off enormously. It's been around for a long time. But everybody's doing production of one kind or another. Either it's music or it's podcasting or movies, you mentioned. And I'm wondering how overall demand on you as an Ardor developer has changed based on the usages.
That's the hard part because we don't directly connect with a lot of users. And we don't have like any, surveys or direct interaction with any of the guys, except for IRC, which we use a lot for connecting with other users. So I expect there are a lot of them out there and we just don't know about them. And for the podcast, I knew there were guys doing that, but until like 2 weeks ago, I never met any of them personally. And we were at Paul and me were both invited to the Ubuntu Summit in Prague. And there were two teams, like one is called the Linux Labs. They're doing podcasts in general. There's like an Irish guy. They're doing that weekly, mostly on like new products that came out. And there's the Ubuntu Portugal podcast. And both of them have presentations and they use Ardor. Like they came up afterwards, like to Paul and me, like, hey, nice software. And they really, the first time we got feedback on persons using Ardor for podcasts, which is kind of fun. And it also coincides with a few new features we added, like in version 7 for dedicating, streamlining podcast editing in the widest sense. And those were motivated by Paul himself doing a podcast. Like he was connecting with Justin Frankel from Repo, which is another DAW. Like they had a 2-hour long conversations and then Paul started editing in Ardor and said like, this is hard. Like how can I even edit it? Like how does anyone manage to use Ardor for podcasts? So like he got busy for a week or two and he added like a few new Ripple edit modes for simplifying podcast edits. And those guys also loved it. And they said, like, the hard part with editing podcasts is not really the technical issues. it's really the time-consuming part. Like, if you have a three-hour podcast, you need to listen through it for 3 hours and find out what to put in. Like, the tooling is a minor issue. Like, pretty much everything works there. So, and one feature that we added a few weeks ago, like, you can just kind of vary speed, like, just listen to it at twice the speed. But then I wrote a plugin for that for like a year ago for a similar use case to everything pitched down in the end. Like, you can listen at twice the speed, but still get like the normal pitch. And that can help. But yeah, anyway.
I'll have to remember that. So I'm one of the users that uses Ardour for editing. It's not exactly a podcast, but something like a podcast. And I did, by the way, find that new Ripple mode to be extremely useful. One of the fun things is hanging out in the IRC and getting to hear people come in with their, you know, stories about the crazy things that they're trying to make Ardour do. And kind of you can just feel sometimes the creative juices that start percolating around as people ask for features and tell you guys stuff that's working and isn't working, and you and Paul will both be going, oh, that's an interesting idea, we could do that. It's fun. It's this collaborative process. I think that's one of the neatest things about open source, is to be able to connect with users and make new fun things happen. Right.
I think the same was also for the users. Like, try to connect to Ableton and reach the head guy. Like, there will be three levels of support, or Steinberg. Yeah, and in IRC, you just hang out with Paul, and there's me, and there's a few other guys who contribute regularly. Like Len Ovens, he's also a contributor, and then Alexandre manages our manual. Like, he does also translations. So there's a couple of regular crowd around who contribute. Yeah, but it's kind of a... There's no, support level indirection happening, which is kind of fun.
Speaking of commercial offerings, something I really wanted to ask you about is Harrison Mixbus. What's the connection there? And if I understand correctly, that's one that you directly have your fingers in.
Right. Harrison is like a derivative product. Their product manager, Ben Loftis, he had like in 2009, he was one of the few guys who had an idea how to commercialize a free software product, a project, like to take Ardour and make something out that he can sell without having any issues like publishing the source at the same time. And there's not a lot of projects who can do that, or even like people with a vision of how to do that. And Harrison has this, like, they're like 40 or 50 years in business. They started doing analog consoles. Then they had this like digital controlled analog consoles, and they have like huge, like, both in Hollywood, they have a big business, and their consoles were also used for a lot of famous records, like from starting with Michael Jackson, Simon and Garfunkel, all the big hit records from the 70s and 80s were done on Harrison consoles. Mm-hmm. So they tried to like, okay, we need to move having a digital product at some point. And they want to focus on what they're doing best, like the mixing desks or the mixer in the DSP and the processing. And they don't want to worry about all the other stuff, like recording and the editor and all the stuff that, constitutes a digital audio workstation, or like MIDI recording. Like, why reinvent the wheel? So he thought, like, okay, we can team up. And they use Harrison Mixbus is an auto derivative with a custom mixer. Like, they changed the UI. And that's also GPL, like all free software. And then they bundle it with their proprietary plugins, which like a dedicated equalizer, a dedicated compressor, and also an gain staging, overdrive, whatever they put in to model their transformer of the audio workstation. And that part is closed source. But you can still run it like without having all the closed source stuff. It just will be like Ardour in that case. Like, it won't add you anything. So in that case, you're better off with Ardour than with Mixbus. And I have to say, we benefit a lot from the collaboration with Harrison, because they have all these experiences for like how it should work, how to streamline a work project. Like, they work with the big parts in the industry for a long time, and also for movie production. They have like they have a couple of Oscars under their belt. Indirectly, because they work with Oscar producers for the audio world, and they know exactly where, how to lay out stuff, how to efficiently use the tooling. And that's a huge influence on the auto development, or a benefit for us. And it's a healthy collaboration since over 10 years now. And I do regular contract work for them, but they hire me mostly to work on order. Like, it's a 50-50 thing. At first, they started to pay me, well, a small, they call it retainer fee, for me to work on order. And I wasn't involved in the closed source part. I was also a free software guy. And I was like, okay, I understand the need for it. And we benefited a lot from that. But I tried to stay outside of the main business and mostly work on the free software stuff. And then at some point, their main DSP guy retired. Like, he was also late 60s. He was around there since the beginning, from Harrison. So they were looking for a new guy. And I said, like, they offered me the job. And I said, like, okay, it's kind of tempting, because, like, it's, where else do you find, like, a free software project? Like, there's nothing like that out there. Like, it's pretty unique. And so I do work partly on their closed source plugins as well. And it's fine.
So, I don't know if you're able to tell us this, but I'm curious. Are some of the big hits today produced on essentially Ardour source code?
I honestly don't know, because really I don't follow up. Like, we don't get a lot. There's on the Ardour forum, we have like a Made with Ardour, but then it's mostly like home or bedroom recorders who come there. I know, like, there's one guy in Berlin who uses it for post-production of, like, famous jazz bands, and he's doing mostly mastering. And I've seen Ardour used at the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, so they, like, they're recording their main orchestra with Ardour. Like, this looks familiar down there. Like, I had a look. And I came afterwards down to the guy, but he was like, oh, I see you're using Linux and Ardour. But he was very defensive. Like, he was, oh, yeah, okay. He was kind of not expecting someone to show, like, he was expecting me to tell him, like, you should, like, use macOS or Windows. So I didn't really get to tell him, like, I'm involved with it. It's kind of a shame.
Oh, that's fun.
So I know a few places that use it, but yeah.
And then I was actually thinking about Mixbus. Like you said, it's a lot of Ardour code under the hood. Is Mixbus have quite a bit of buy-in in some of the bigger places?
You would need to ask the Harrison guys, because I really can't talk about this also.
Understood. Yeah, I thought that might potentially be the case.
You never see a CD that says, like, produced with Pro Tools. Like, nobody says what they're using during production.
That's true.
And there's a few big guys on the forum as well. I just do occasional contract work for them. Like, I'm not really working for Harrison. So it's...
Got it.
Maybe you can get Ben Loftus there at one point. Like, he can talk about all the fun stuff.
Oh, that'd be fun. So Ardour just had a big release, the 7.0, and then a follow-up, the 7.1. Let's chat a little bit about some of the new stuff that's in Ardour 7. And I'm sure you got a hand in working on a bunch of that. Kind of what's the overview? What's new in 7?
The amazing part in 7, like, the for a casual user, there was initially no big news at all, because the last 2 years we're working under the hood to change the complete time representation. Ardour represents, like, audio time, which is like samples that comes from the audio clock, and like music time, which is bars and beats. And we had lots of bugs in pretty much all the versions earlier, because we were always using sample time for representing music clock in the way under the hood. And that led to, like, lost notes, or like all the MIDI stuff was kind of subtly broken. You change the tempo, and at some point, like, a note went, like, it didn't play anymore, or it was stuck forever. And we figured we needed to fix this for good, and it was like a 200 or 300 year long effort to change everything under the hood. And then we figured, okay, if we release this now, nobody's going to notice the difference. Okay, MIDI will just work, but yeah, big deal. And then Paul came up, like, it was his kind of idea to start, like, what Ableton Live does, to have, like, a queue or clip launching feature in it. Because now that we have, like, proper musical time, we can really just do this correctly. We can time stretch any region, which can be audio MIDI, and then time stretch it exactly to the bar beat, and having it loop correctly, and even, repeat it correctly without having any lost events or lost notes. So, if you scroll a bit back up, you see, like, the big new part in Ardour 7 was, call it a trigger page or a queue, Because you can queue up new events to happen, and those queues just do something, which is usually like launch a new clip or trigger some automation. And that was the main thing.
Yeah, it's this guy. So for those that don't understand what we're talking about, it's using a controller kind of like this. This one's not yet supported, but right. It's coming, hopefully. But the ability to have different loops on different buttons and punch a button and get a loop to start, say like a bass drum on your one and your three, boom, boom. And then you can add a snare on two and four and, you know, add some chords and add something else. And then in the middle of a performance or recording a song, you can hit one of the other buttons and mix up what your bass drum is doing. And, as far as music goes, a pretty new way to perform music. But there are some people doing some very impressive things with that, both recording, mixing, and also live performance. And I am pretty stoked because I see a future for using Ardour for all of that stuff. And, you know, once it's early on in that being supported in Ardour, but it's really it's a pretty cool feature that's added. I'm excited about it.
Well, you explain it a lot better than I do. Well, that's one key difference.
It helps to have the prop.
Indeed. It's not like when you press a button, like it starts immediately, but you cue it for the next beat or the next bar. Like you say, like at the start of the next bar, the kick drum goes in, or at the end of the bar, the kick drum stops. So it's like you're not live playing it, but you're preparing a bit ahead of time what will happen.
You're really setting up all the things that are going to happen on the next measure.
Beat. That's a fun part of the whole thing to do anyway.
Yeah, it's very fun. So what plans, what crazy new things are coming down the pipe for 7.2 then?
Well, we still have a lot to clean up. Like the 7.0 release was as most of the .0 releases are, like lots of small issues and bugs. So we immediately had a 7.1, a hotfix release, to get, there was a couple of really critical bugs in a .0 release. And we still have one more to go, I think. The big new thing is also like having support for a launch pad that will be down the road pretty soon. And it's a good, well, we have to check what we're going to do. Because we're just going to wing it.
It depends on what people come into IRC and ask about.
Yeah. I have one big thing that's coming. It's like for VST3 plugins, we don't have multibus support. So that will take me a better of a month, like the end of the year, to add that. And lots of people have been asking that as well. For if you have like a drum machine and... then you can have like a stereo output, or you can have like a dedicated snare output and a hi-hat output. Like you have multi-busing, and you can then mix all of those outputs separately or individually. And that works for VST2 plugins and for audio unit, but in Ardour we don't have support for VST3 yet. So that's a kind of a technical thing, but many people, it comes up like every week, twice or three times.
This is great. I find myself wanting to see demos, but I want to get around to asking. Before I get to that, I have to let everybody know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Whether you're new to the IT field or a seasoned pro, IT Pro TV's online IT training courses can change your life. They offer virtual learning solutions for everyone. IT training videos, every vendor and skill you need to start or advance your IT career, done in talk show format that keeps you interested and excited to learn. IT Pro TV has more than 5,800 hours of IT training with current content added daily, so courses are always up to date. Courses you can binge in 20 to 30 minute episodes. Interactive IT virtual labs. IT Pro TV sets itself apart with hands-on learning via their hosted virtual labs. Get on-demand access to cloned virtual machine environments to test the skills you're learning. There's IT certification practice tests. You take and retake tests to ensure you're ready and confident before you sit for the exam. Join their online community of IT learners There are over 220,000 of those. You can share in forums and engage with instructors directly. Learn when and where you want on a desktop, Apple TV, or Roku. Hit the road with your tablet or mobile device. Don't pay for a university degree just to work in IT. Stay focused on tech with affordable certification-based learning that'll get you a job. Each month, IT Pro TV offers multiple free webinars that you can watch live or on demand at your convenience. You can also watch them live on IT Pro TV's social channels, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook. On November 17th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, check out the IT Pro TV Turkey Bowl. Join them for live games and gift giveaways for the holidays. Tim Broom, the co-founder of IT Pro TV, says it best himself. We want to make life easier for people who want an IT career. It's as simple as that. Get 30% off when you sign up at itpro.tv/twit and use code TWIT30. That's 30% off when you sign up at itpro.tv/twit and use code TWIT30. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. So Robin, I've been using Audacity for a very long time. Never thought of anything else. And I'm wondering I'm not a heavy duty user. I've edited some podcasts and pulled together, you know, things for family and stuff like that. But I'm wondering, you know, what Ardor seems a more heavy duty, almost a vertical application for kind of workstation operators and people with really big screens and really good speakers and headphones. But I'm wondering, you know, what's, you know, how does that sort out? That's an open source program too. So what's the comparison there between the two?
In the past, until lately, Audacity was a sound file editor. Like you open a WAV file, you make changes, and it directly changes the data on what's in the file on disk. And it's called like destructive editing.
Right.
So every time you make a change, it changes the file on disk. If you apply effect, like you lose whatever was there before. They're changing that recently also in Audacity. Like they're also moving more and more towards a DAW workflow. And in Ardor, one of the main concepts is like it's non-destructive. Like once you've recorded audio on disk, it stays like that forever. And it everything else, all the edits you've done, all the effects you apply are just metadata. And so as soon as you like, even if you play, like the effects are applied in real time and you can automate the effects. Or if you have a mixing desk, you can move a fader live and in real time, it will apply whatever you're doing. So people have also been using Ardor for doing like live mixing, you know, in a way. And you couldn't do that with Audacity, which is more kind of, well, you operate on a file, which happens on your hard disk. And I think, well, you can still do any live mixing in Audacity, but they're starting to having like audio regions. So edits are no longer destructive. They're moving more and more in the DAW direction since a year or two. But then otherwise, a second difference is massive multi-tracking. Like if you go to a concert, like, or even like a live festival, like you suddenly have 64 audio inputs or 128, and Ardor like scales, even like the people using up for like soundtracks. You also use a few hundred tracks. Like you, tracks are not expensive in Ardor. You can just have even 1,000 of them, like at some point. It's just a screen estate. That's the hard part. But under the hood, Ardor scales a lot, like, well, most DAWs do, and sound file editors operating on files are not designed for that workflow. So that's another reason why, well, if you're doing more and more music, or if you record a drum set, like even if you have like, 16 inputs for snare, hi-hat, kick drum and all that, you want to put them on different tracks and then group them. A DAW is made for that kind of workflow, as opposed to a sound file editor, which is more of kind of a for simple stereo recording that you want to split up or like cut up some stuff that you don't want to hear anymore or rearrange things. And also now with the third part that we're adding, like the trigger or cue page when you do live performances, or like new feature that I was going to continue early on is like recording into those trigger slots. Like you can directly record in the slot and then trigger it on a button. For live performance, that's also stuff you can do with in Ardor right now, but you couldn't do with Audacity. It's different. It's conceptually different why you would use when you use the different tools, even though they have some overlap in the use cases. Eventually.
So I'm curious. Do you actually use Ardour outside of developing on it? You still have some projects you do with it, and then if you do, what does your setup look like? What platform do you use it on, and all of that?
Well, less and less. It's a funny thing. Like the more I get into programming, the more I spend time music. And then when I actually do make music, I'm kind of it's great to be away from the computer screen. So I do have a small Fender twin amp I play guitar through. I used to play saxophone as well, but it's kind of ever since I moved out of my student apartment like 20 years ago, not really much of an option anymore. Like most of the apartments I've been into, like my neighbors will complain sooner or later. It's fine here, but it's still kind of I can play guitar fine also through a headphone, and that's okay.
Yep.
I used to do lots of, for the sound design, I was recording and also did Foley works. So like microphone in and did edit that for the movies. It was the last big productions I did also using Ardour. And then afterwards, I've been to jam sessions that I didn't record myself, like also here in Berlin, a guy was using Ardour to record. And then I used Mixbus afterwards for the post-production. Okay. And I was playing mostly guitar and bass. I do have some sound cards these days. They're mostly really more for testing than any production. Yeah, you know how it goes.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you end up with a lot of hardware laying around that, you know, somebody requested and maybe paid to make sure this works. And so you end up with FireWire and USB and PCI Express and just all the things laying around and not enough time to go and actually play with them. I understand.
Well, I did write some kernel drivers for some of them. That's kind of also helpful to getting hardware in. Mm-hmm. And I still use them for testing for Ardour. Like when I use as a constant permanent feedback or like loopback, so I can measure and latency. Like I play out to one channel and loop back on an input. And I also build soldered a small adapter board for the MIDI. Like I can send MIDI out and get the raw MIDI signal as an audio input in and the other way around. So I can check that everything lines up. Like if you record overdubs, you want everything to line up perfectly. Like I just remove the human, like get the headphone directly into the mic and measure it on the cable because whatever, that's perfect. I don't need to have the human in there as well. So I have one sound card set up completely like that to do like constant, Q&A if you want it like that to see if everything works. And the other one is like now I use it's a Prisonus. I bought it myself for doing music in the early days. It's pretty much the only one I paid for, and I still love it. That's what I'm using right now as well for the podcast.
Yeah. Do you primarily work on Linux?
Yeah. Well, I started getting a Mac mostly the Harrisons they keep sending me. I refuse to have a Windows machine around since I haven't used Windows since 95. That's what got me on Linux. Like I had like a, I was like 16 or 17 and my first PC was like, it came with Windows and was not happy with it.
Yeah.
The cool thing was Minesweeper. I think that's the only one thing I used to play on there.
That sounds about right.
I got on Linux like in 96, 97. I didn't have much of a use case back then. As soon as I went to university, it was 100% Linux and never looked back. Also helped me get a couple of jobs at a university in the computational department and helped with my thesis. So it was kind of
All right. So I'm going to go down the rabbit hole just a little bit, and I've got to ask you about PipeWire. This is a thing that I just love. I think PipeWire is the best, and it's kind of like CAF. A lot of people, when you say that, they go, oh, so let's chat about it. What do you think?
I still have hopes it's going to be the future. So back when it started, like I connected with Wim in 2018 or 2019, and he had like a first prototype. And it was Paul and me were like, no, do you really want to redesign that? And he did. Like, I was really surprised. Like, because Jack was so amazing as a sound system on Linux. It scales up to like, you can even like, wavefield synthesis systems with like 3,000 speakers. Like, there's one at the, TU in Berlin like that, just close by. I can walk there, which is pretty fancy. They're still using Jack. Mm-hmm. And it scales amazingly well. And so it was the first revisions of Pipeboy. I just didn't have that nice of a performance. And so Wim wasn't also aware of all the implications of doing that. And afterwards, I toyed with it a few times. I'm not using Pipewire myself yet. And he fixed like most of the big issues. And it's impressive in the sense like we kept telling him like copy what Apple on Core Audio does because they got it right. And it is possible. And a lot of the concepts are amazing. Like I still wish we had like a Steve Jobs kind of person in Linux Audio, someone who can really put the foot down and say, like, no, you're going to use that and you don't use anything else. Because we have a huge fragmentation in Linux. Yeah. And that was happening in the same time when OS X came out or OS X. Like mm-hmm. he said, like, okay, no, all the audio stuff, like it's going to be Core Audio, all your old applications won't work anymore. You got to switch and that's going to be the system you're going to use. Mm-hmm. And on Linux, it doesn't work like that. So we need to have someone who builds a system that everybody will want to use, so the other one's going to fall into disrepair. And that was my motivation to push Pipewire, so that we can finally have like one system that can pretty much supersede everything else. And okay.
the coolest thing that I like so much about Pipewire is that it lets you, so using Jack on Linux, you're pretty much locked to a single input device and a single output device, which there are reasons for that. It makes sense, but CPUs are fast enough now that that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And Pipewire just said, oh, we're going to do away with that limitation and we're just going to resample when we need to. And so you can do, well, you can do fun things like my microphone is being recorded by Zoom because that's what we're using for the conference. My microphone is also being recorded by Ardour, and Pipewire just goes, yeah, I'll make two copies of that. No problem. And that was something that just you couldn't do. You may have been able to do it with Pulse Audio, but it would have been janky.
You can also do it. There's applications, third party applications to do it, but you need the command line, which is the hard part.
Well, but the problem with trying to do it with Jack though is that Zoom doesn't have a Jack. Zoom is not a Jack client, and so you've got to set up something real crazy, like, all right, Jack working with Pulse Audio to be able to make those two things happen. And yeah, I've set it up, and it is a pain. Whereas with Pipewire, it just works, which is great.
Right. Yeah, they simplified that setup. Of course, well, it's a lot simpler to get started with. And there was also some refusals, like in Jack, when you record in a pro studio, you don't want to resample. It's not a CPU overhead. It's a quality issue from the sound. Like you don't want to resample your snare drum, for example, because you're going to hear a difference. It's not so much of an issue with voice, like voice, your human, well, there's not a lot of either high frequency content that would be affected. And also the phasing issue, like there's, well, you're fine. You can just resample it and nobody will hear it. Also because, the artifacts are so low down in the noise floor that most people won't even realize it on a casual laptop. But if you do music production, you care about those things. And so a lot of the Jack developers or Linux Pro Audio guys, they were kind of, yeah, we could do that, but we kind of, we don't want to make it possible because it affects like the Pro Audio user. And there's still kind of a disconnect from the like a little bit of pushback from those guys with to Pipewire. And we recommend, like, if you do a production or like Pro Audio production, don't use Pipewire. Like, they still allow you to connect, like bypass it and use the ALSA device. Otter can just connect to it directly, so you don't have all the artifacts. But I think for the casual desktop user, it will be the way to go in the long run. There's still small artifacts. Like latency compensation is one. Like you need to, at one point you need to measure like how long does it take for my audio to reach the speaker, or the same from getting from my microphone until it gets digitized to my sound card. The sound card has a small systemic latency, which you need to measure. It's different for every sound card. And then the bus, the PCI bus, how long does it take until it reaches your CPU and it actually reaches Ardour? And those delays you need to like measure and compensate for if you do like overdubs with a guitar in a studio. And Pipewire is not quite there yet with getting that stuff right. So anyway, But they're moving fast. Like, Wim is an amazing person. Like, I met him half a year ago. Mm-hmm. And we hang out for a day or two in Berlin and, well, discussing about all the stuff that still needs to happen. But yeah, on the other hand, they're pushing it out because they need bug reports from the normal desktop users, which are the big crowd. And right. So if you don't release, like, it's a release early, release often kind of a thing, like, to collect bug reports. And, well, we know it's not quite there yet, but it will get there.
Yes, indeed. I have a question from the back channel I want to get to. But first, I have to let you know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat. You know, when you're working on a project and you leave behind a small reminder in the code, a code comment to help others learn from your work, well, this podcast takes that idea by letting you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process. There's a lot of work required to bring a project from whiteboard to development, and none of us can do it alone. The host, Burr Sutter, is a Red Hatter and a lifelong developer advocate and a community organizer. In each episode, Burr sits down with experienced technologists from across the industry to trade stories and talk about what they've learned from their experiences. For example, I checked out a deep learning episode. It's really good. I subscribe to it. It's a really great podcast. Those episodes are available anywhere you listen to podcasts and at redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. We'll also include a link in the show notes. My thanks to Code Comments for their support. So we have a question in the back channel about your own work, and can we hear, I guess, some of your own stuff out there that you've produced with Ardor, if I'm remembering that right. It's been a few minutes.
Yeah. The movies we did, they're online also on, you can find them on YouTube. And for the music I did, there's a few on my website, but I don't usually, I don't have a SoundCloud account. I'm not very much of a social media person. Like, I sent them on IRC to some guys, but I'm more kind of one-to-one exchange. Not like, I don't post all the stuff like one-to-many publishing things so much. So yeah. But I can give you a link later on that you can put in the subtitles or of the podcast. That might work.
We can find the movies. What are the names of them? What do we search for to find those couple of movies online?
Okay, the first is called Marzipan, like a marzipan in English, I guess, the sweet you get on Christmas. Mm-hmm. And you would look for my wife's name, Carolina Fikes. She's a movie director.
Okay.
And then that would be on YouTube.
All right.
And the other one, they were in competition on a couple of Marzipan movies, a website, but it doesn't link to the YouTube channel, I guess. They were in competition at some of the festivals, so initially we couldn't publish them, and it was also uploaded by a third party. Like, we're not involved in getting this on YouTube because it was founded by the Dutch Film Fund. We made them on 16 and 35 millimeter. Like, it wasn't it was really movies, not a video camera, but actually cutting film. That also was a lot easier for me to make sound design to that, because all the movie editing was done before I got started with the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And I could just with a one light scan, and I could have a ready-made short video to work with, and not having any forth and back, what you do most more commonly these days. And then you would need to have also a video editor to pull in new changes and have a proper exchange format. So in the early 2000s, it was still kind of a old school production thing that we did.
Yeah. So you and Paul just recently got together at one of the conferences in Europe, didn't you?
Yeah. So it's funny, we haven't met each other for 5 years. And then we we're averaging for meeting at least every 2 years. But then, okay, COVID happened and, all kinds of the world shut down kind of thing. Which was good for us because everybody was sitting at home and making music. So there are a lot of new other users, also our finances got a lot better for those 2 years. But then we only chatted on IRC, and then we were okay, we needed to meet up, and I'm going to fly over and visit Paul in early January next year. So as soon as we set it up, there was one guy who packages Arda for Ubuntu, Eric Eichmeier, and he kind of asked like, hey, you want to come off to the Ubuntu Summit? They're having some like a track with artists and content creators. And so suddenly we met as well, like just last week, which is kind of funny. So we saw each other right now and we see each other again, like just 2 months from now. Already looking forward. It's really fun to hang out with Paul. Speaking of which, yes, like this code comments, like that's also something I really love in Arda. The first time I got into the source code, he left a couple of really funny code comments in there. Like if you go through the code base, you're going to love that. Like there's a bit of profanity here and there as well.
Oh, of course. Of course. Always. When you guys got together, did you come up with any grand plans for the future, or was it trying to ignore Ardor and just spend some time together?
Well, we started really not talking about Ardor at all, like because when you're in an office with another guy, just like having a fun talk at the coffee machine about other stuff that happens. Yeah. And we never really have that. And so the first couple of days were really just like catching up and hanging out and having fun. But yeah, we had a couple of ideas for the future as well. For modulation is another big feature that we want to introduce, parameter modulation for that. So you can, well, it's one big feature that Arda doesn't have yet. And you could just like grab one, dubstep might be an example. You have like a kick drum and you use the volume of the kick to change an equalizer later on, or to change even like using a sidechain input to a compressor, like to dub another track depending on input from a different source. Or you have like musical time modulation, like you'd have a vibrato effect that goes depending on your musical time. You have like a volume modulation going out, or you can imagine all kinds of stuff, a cutoff filter for an instrument that is being controlled by the outer timeline.
It almost sounds like you're trying to take some inspiration from what guys are doing with modular synthesis and some of the crazy Eurorack stuff. Mm-hmm. That would be fun to see too. I may or may not have some Eurorack modules over there I'm playing with.
You can have a VTV rack. Paul loves to play with rack. And so I think that's also some part of his motivation. Although modulation in a DAW is usually less, not as a sample level, but more like a higher level control. But you don't have like rigging modulation. You don't use it to sculpt sounds, what you do in a modular synth, but more kind of as a control parameter that changes over time or depending on an input. So that's one of the things that we kind of planned out how to do that in an evening. Well, it's going to be 2 years of work. Right? Yeah, okay. But right. It was a fun thing to talk about. So that, there was also a nice band at the summit. Like at the last day, they had a riverboat. Like we were really like, they hired a whole boat for 200 guys. And we went on the Moldau on the river for the whole evening and had a band, a Linux audio band playing there. Nice. And they're from Madison, Wisconsin. And they publish all their Arda sessions on GitHub. I didn't even know, like they're doing this since 10 years. It's also kind of Arda users are everywhere and we have no clue they're out there.
So yeah, so I've got to ask.
They're demo sessions. We bundle them anyway.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah, that would be fun. That would be a lot of fun, actually. So I've got to ask, what is the weirdest or most notable thing that you are aware of somebody doing with Ardor?
There was one guy, Jörn Nettingsmeier. He did live front of house mixes with Ardor. And he even, like, in between breaks, he filed a bug report and he compiled it. And then during the break, while the show were having a break, and then getting back on, a bug fix. And like, that was one of the craziest experiences I was, while being around.
That's awesome.
Anyway.
Well, that is a great question to almost close with. Just quickly, is there anything that we haven't asked that you'd like us to have asked that you can answer quickly?
I think I talked about so much over the last hour. Like, I'm pretty good, actually.
I learned a lot. So we have some final questions we always ask, final two, which is, what are your favorite text editor and scripting language?
I worked with VI. Pretty much, well, because it works on every system, even Mac or the university, they had AIX systems. It was installed just wherever, every system I touched, VI was around, or later Vim. And I'm pretty comfortable with using that also for doing auto. Scripting languages would probably be Lua these days. Also because it's a real-time safe language, and I started adding support for it in auto a few years ago. I used to do Perl a lot more than Python. But yeah, I'm going to go with Lua and VI.
That's good. That's good. A lot of votes for VI. We had one of our first for Lua, so that's good to have it in there. Mm-hmm. Not that we're keeping a record, but it's just memories.
I don't care. I've been in, like, doing programming languages since like 20 years, so at some point they're all pretty much same concepts, and then it takes an hour or two to get into again, but then afterwards, well... But yeah.
Cool. It has been great having you on the show. We'd love to have you back. We say that often, but with stuff moving as quickly as yours is, this is, very tempting. So we look forward to having you back.
Well, thanks for having me. That hour flew by like a... thought it would take a lot longer to talk about. Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes.
So thanks again. See you.
Yeah. See you.
So Jonathan, that was good.
Oh, that was fun.
You had a lot of great questions. Are you a musician also? You sounds that you are a musician, I think.
I'm in this weird spot where I have musical instruments and I like to fiddle around with them sometimes. I don't know that I would call myself, at least not currently, a musician. it's an odd spot. No, I've been using Ardour for a long time. Let's see, it was 2006 or so, while I was in college, somebody introduced to me this really cool, thing to do music, or to actually, we were recording live music, and he was using Ardour to add some effects and do the mastering. And I saw that and realized that, oh, that runs on Linux too, because I at about that same time finally jettisoned my Windows install and gone to Linux only. And so that was just kind of this breakthrough. Oh, there's this really ridiculously good setup out there, and you can get it. At the time, as a poor college student, so I was excited that you could get it for free through your distro. And then, recently I've actually become one of the paid subscribers to Ardour. We didn't even talk about their funding model at all today. We talked about it when we talked to Paul. But you can pay $1, $4, or $10, or I think 50 is their top tier for, commercial use. And you get a little bit of support and you get the official downloads. I'm actually a subscriber now to Ardour, but it's a neat system. And using it with Pipewire on Linux, the things that you can do and the ways that you can make audio move around throughout your system to be able to record things and do live processing is just really impressive. The things you can do with it are really cool.
Well, that's great. And my time is so used up with other things, but I'm going to try it out. I'm going to see what I can do. See how that works. Then get off of Audacity a little bit. So what have you got to plug? I know Hackaday, but give us the whole show.
Yeah. So I've got the security column goes live on Hackaday every Friday morning, and that's a big deal. It's a lot of fun. You can follow me there for security updates, which you need to know. But also, we need to talk about Club Twit briefly. So there's two things. There's the Untitled Linux Show, which is every Saturday evening we record and have a lot of fun there. And then tomorrow, the 17th, I think. Yes, November 17th, we're doing an Ask Me Anything, where people have been compiling questions and they're going to be thrown to me live real time on Club Twit. And I'm going to scramble to try to come up with answers and not make myself look ridiculous or foolish. And it's going to be a great time. So make sure to be there too.
I was thinking every Saturday night, you could have a date night with Jonathan. I like that.
Yes. To geek out over Linux stuff. It sounds great.
Geek out over Linux stuff. Well, this has been great. This has been a great show. And thanks for coming off 3 weeks in a row so far as a co-host. Next week, we have Matthias Kirschner of the Free Software Foundation. Been a while since we heard from the FSF, I think. So it'll be great to have him on. So that is coming up next week. And until then, I'm Doc Searles. This has been Floss Weekly. We'll see you then.
Hey, folks, I'm Ant Pruitt. And what do you get your favorite tech geek that has everything? A Club Twit gift subscription, of course. Twit podcasts keep them informed and entertained with the most relevant tech news podcasts available. With a Club Twit subscription, they get access to all of our podcasts ad-free. They also get access to our members-only Discord, access to exclusive outtakes, behind-the-scenes, and special content such as AMAs, which I just love hosting, plus exclusive shows such as Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows, and the Untitled Linux Show. Purchase your geek's gift at twit.tv/clubtwit, and it will thank you every day.